This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 123. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchfishing.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
So Berners, it's the height of summer here in the UK, and it's cold and it's wet, as always happens at these peak times of year. How's the things with you?
Yes, wet, blustery. A few sight screens going past the window here as I look out the window, but yeah, it's not too bad. We're English at the end of the day, aren't we? We're used to it, my boy.
Yeah, you just get on with it, don't you? It's one of those occupational hazards of living in this part of the world. And of course, the exciting news this week is the England against India Test Series. That's probably one of the biggest series in the world now, with India being the number one world Test team. Are you looking forward to the battle stretching out in front of us?
I am. I think it's going to be brilliant, and looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds. Actually, I think them not having the older opening batsman there might cause a few problems, because he's pretty big part of their team. So without him, it could be a slightly different acquisition. But they've still got Tendulkar, Laxman, and Dhoni, people like that to contend with. So it'll be interesting. I think a lot of people are calling for England to have a fifth bowler. What do you think about that?
Well, I am a fan of having five bowlers in all circumstances, because, well, you just never know. It gives you that extra option, and allows you to take wickets when nothing's happening. You've got that extra option there. So I mean, whatever level of cricket, it's always handy to have that fifth bowler. The only problem is, how do you squeeze him into the side? Because you need someone who can bat a six, and you need someone who can bat a seven. So that's not easy to do. So I don't know. Matt Prior at six, and is Tim Bresnan too high at seven? That's a difficult one for the England selectors. I think they'll probably go with the four bowlers. That's what's brought them success. So they'll probably stick with that.
Yeah. They'll probably take a lot of heart about Somerset's ability to kind of exploit the Indian bowling attack during the warm-up game, and the fact they only got about, I think, five wickets in two innings, so not really didn't look to have that much penetration about it. But I think the really good one is the absence of Sehwag from an England fan's perspective, because he can be pretty damaging up front, and if you can get a good start against India, I guess you can get right into their middle order, which is it's not too strong, is it, as we've seen?
Well, yeah, when you've got the wall at number three, that's always interesting. But I think the world will be watching. I think everyone will be interested in the result of the series, because you've got some superstar names playing, and they really are two teams who are at the top of the tree when it comes to Test cricket. Although I've been watching this enforcer debate quite closely, this whole thing about Stuart Broad and what type of bowler he is. I don't know about you, but I'm all for roles in cricket teams, and I think that's an important thing. To everybody knows what they need to do, what their job is in the team. But I'm not sure about this whole idea of having an enforcer. I don't really know what that means. You don't see enforcers in club cricket very often, do you?
Yeah, I think it's kind of how a player gets placed. It's almost like a brand, isn't it, how you envisage them. And I don't know about Stuart Broad being an enforcer. He looks more like Tintin to me, but I think Flower nailed it on the head, and he wants him to be more kind of consistent and improving his accuracy, which is what's going to yield results, I guess. Being an enforcer, I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah, I think I don't really know what that means. Does that just mean you can bowl a good bouncer?
Yeah, I think, well, an enforcer to me would be someone who knocks people over and really exerts kind of pace and bounce and roughs someone up. I'd say that's more given to Tremlett's kind of role. He's kind of got the aura to go with it as well. He looks a bit like Giant Haystacks, doesn't he, Tremlett? So
he's a big...
I'm not sure how much Broad can do in terms of damage to a batsman's ego with his kind of private schoolboy quiff and his paltry approach to the crease. But who knows? I think it was one of those that they thought they would get a new story out there, and
yeah,
it's all kind of sparks a giant debate.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think a lot of it is paper talk. I mean, when it comes to bowling, I mean, it doesn't matter again what level you're playing, whether you're playing in a test match or whether you're playing in a village green match on a Sunday afternoon. You know, what are you trying to do? You're trying to hit the top of off stump. That's your bread and butter, isn't it? That's what's going to get you wickets more often than not. So, you know, swing it away a bit, swing it in a bit, and knock the stumps over. Don't, especially if you're playing on the village green. I played a midweek game this week, and the bowlers were infuriated by catches going up and being the most simplest of catches being dropped by post work players not really paying attention. So yeah, if you don't trust anyone else to catch it, then just knock the stumps over, for goodness sake, stop messing around.
Yeah. I think it's the fact that old Broadie bowls a pretty decent bouncer as well, so the reputation of kind of having that fear factor has stemmed from that, because he can bowl quite a foolish bouncer, which I think is quite a good tool in a bowler's weaponry. So who knows? Let's just bowl straight and worry about that. We should have, I think if you're a bowler, you should have four enforcers, shouldn't you? Or you could even say in a national test cricket team, you should have 11 enforcers all doing their various components to the best of their ability and worrying the oppo.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how say, a pitch map varies between someone who is an enforcer and someone who is not an enforcer. You know, how is, you know, Jimmy Anderson, I suppose, is the opposite end of the scale, isn't he? The kiss the surface type, you know, pitch it up, swing it bowler. So, but he's got a slippery bouncer as well. So how would the two differ, and would you see something different again if you took it down another level to, say, you know, UK Premier League cricket or grade cricket? Where would it differ again? I think maybe in grade cricket you see a lot more short stuff, don't you? Because the wickets are harder, and it's a lot easier to bowl a bouncer at club level in Australia than it is in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you face many bouncers in your games? I can't even. I think I can only ever remember facing one in my entire career batting.
Yeah, you get a few good decks up in London. It depends who you're playing against. You can get the odd good bumper, but normally it's not used to the best of the bowler's ability, and it ends up in someone's garden. But yeah, down in Australia, it was quite hostile. I'll tell you that, mate. God blimey, you didn't get many in your half over there.
Not really. See, that is enforcer bowling, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that wasn't all to do with the state of the game either. As soon as I open my mouth and they realise you're a pom, it all starts coming in around your neck.
Yeah, that's the thing about a good bouncer, isn't it? It has to be accurate. It's no good ballooning it over someone's head. It's a waste of everyone's time.
Yep.
You've got to get it up in the ribs. Aim for the neck.
Exactly.
It's time to catch up now with Craig Wright, captain of Watsonian CC, our case study club for the 2011 summer. Craig, it's been a few weeks since we last spoke, so how is the season gone in the last month or so?
It's been a little bit damp, to be fair, so we've missed quite a few matches, particularly in the league. I think we've only played two out of our last five matches, both of which we've won. But we've made some good progress in the cup competition, in the Scottish Cup, and we're through to the semi-final of that competition, which is coming up this Sunday. So probably since I last spoke to you, we've done well in terms of the games we have played, albeit we've had a few go by the wayside with the weather.
Yeah, that can be difficult for players, can't it? If you miss a game, suddenly, you know, it's 2 weeks since you've picked up a cricket bat or bowled a ball in anger.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it's obviously affected practice as well, and it feels like we've played more football than we have cricket over the last month and a half. But as I say, when we have managed to get on the park, the performances have been quite good, and we've managed to get some wins under our belt. So we're hanging in there.
Now you're captain of Watsonian, and recently Darren Sammy, the West Indian captain, said that he thought captaincy was overrated. I mean, he was talking obviously about at international level, but how important do you feel captaincy is, certainly at club level?
I think it is important. I think, you know, that's probably one of the beauties of cricket from a captaincy point of view. It's one of the few games that perhaps the captain can actually have a direct influence on the course of a game. You know, unlike football or rugby, you know, a cricket captain can actually have a real tactical input as the game's progressing and make a difference in terms of where the game goes. So I don't necessarily agree with those sentiments. And, you know, it's certainly one of the things that I enjoy in terms of captaining cricket teams is the fact that you can actually have a little bit of an influence over the course of a game in terms of your tactical decisions or your bowling changes or, you know, field positions or whatever it might be. And that's one of the beauties of it, I think.
And when you are captain playing at a club level, how does your day differ? Give us kind of a typical way that your Saturday afternoon differs as captain as it would compared to being a player.
I think it just really probably broadens your focus a little bit in terms of you know, having to think about the other players, think about a little bit the preparation, what you do before the match, think a little bit more tactically about the game. Rather than just if you're just a player, just thinking about your own performance from a sort of preparation and from a tactical point of view. So I mean, and again, as I say, that's something I've always quite enjoyed. You know, thinking about the game in a sort of wider sense rather than just sort of focusing more on your own performance. So I mean, yeah, it probably differs in that sense, but it's not a massive difference. And I think once you've got you know, a little bit of experience, and once you've done it for a while, you know, that becomes easier and just more a sort of matter of course.
So thinking about, say there's someone listening to this and they're a fairly new captain, they're not familiar with things yet, how much time would you say, and how formal would you say that you have to do the thinking about the tactics? You know, would you recommend a new captain sort of sitting down and working things out with a bit of paper, you know, on the night before or something like that, if he's not completely sure he's going to do the next day?
Possibly. I mean, I think if you've got knowledge about the opposition that you're playing against, you might have a little bit of a think about about, you know, some of your plans to particular batsmen, in terms of who bowls to them or where the bowlers try and bowl or what field you set, or, you know, if you're playing at different grounds that you might know the characteristics of, whether you might want to bat first or bowl first, and also your sort of batting strategy against the opposition bowlers, if you know what what type of bowlers they're going to be coming at you with. But, you know, I think experience has got a lot to do with it. I think, you know, as I say, the more you do it, the more that you can do these things probably a little bit more instinctively and off the cuff, rather than maybe, you know, having to think too much about it beforehand. But I think for a young captain especially, I think it's very important to have possibly older, experienced characters around about that, you know, can assist them with the sort of tactical side of things, maybe with a little bit with the man management side of things. And yeah, probably my advice to young captains would be to try and, you know, speak as much to, you know, older, experienced players as they can, who might be in their club. I was certainly fortunate to play with some of those sort of characters when I was young and just a player. You know, but always sort of gleaned quite a lot and took quite a lot from sort of watching how the sort of older, experienced players and captains went about their business. So that's probably as good a piece of advice as any that I could give.
And characters are also an important part of captaincy, understanding how people tick so you can get more out of them. How do you deal with, say, a young player who's coming into the side who might be a bit nervous, he's not had much experience at first team level? What can you do to reassure him and help him feel more confident as a captain?
Well, I think it's just a case of giving them the opportunity in the first place, and trying to make them believe that you've given them that opportunity because you think they're good enough. Having said that, I think you know that confidence really comes when players get involved, get selected, and actually perform. So I think giving them the opportunity in the first place and giving them the chance to probably prove to themselves what they're capable of doing is probably the most important thing of all. But I mean, anything you can do from a verbal point of view in terms of talking to them and encouraging them and trying to make them believe in themselves and believe in their ability to perform perhaps at a level that's a little bit higher than they have done before. I think that's important. But I think it depends. It depends a lot on the individual, whether the individual concerned has a little bit of inbuilt self-confidence, or whether they're maybe a little bit more of a sort of reserved character and need a little bit more of a sort of bolstering or whatever. So it depends a lot on the individual themselves.
How much leeway do you give to a young player who is a little bit nervous? Perhaps they don't bowl or bat as well as they could do in the first couple of tries. Do you give them a little bit more leeway than you would an experienced player who's out of form?
I think without a doubt, I think you have to. Perhaps that's a criticism that could be levelled at a lot of clubs, certainly up here in the past, that young players maybe didn't get the opportunity that they needed to develop because clubs were, perhaps overly worried about results and whatever else. So they tend to, and it's understandable, I suppose, you tend to think, okay, well, the older, more experienced players, the one we want to go with and the one we want to stick with in terms of, batting in the higher positions or bowling most of the overs. And I think that's quite often to the detriment of some quite talented young players. And I think up here, perhaps there's been a little bit of a shift in terms of the mentality towards that. And I think maybe now more young players are getting that opportunity. And I think you see it from the performances that some of those young players are putting in, that actually with that opportunity, they're actually putting in performances. And I'm sure at the same time, developing that self-confidence that you talk about.
Well, Craig, good luck on Sunday with your cup game. We'll be reporting on a final before too long, and we'll catch up again before the end of the season.
Cheers, David.
Time now for your questions answered, and don't forget that if your question is chosen as the best question of the week, you get a chance to win a prize, and that is a coaching course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you have some questions there. If you can get the mail sack out and have a look around inside it.
Indeed, we got a question here from Adam. He's from the northeast. He sounds like a canny lad. And he's just wondering about youth county cricket. He's wondering how he can get involved in the under 14 and 15 county setup. He says that he plays for his local club side. He's in the under 15s there and also in the under 18 academy, Sunday league team, which is designed to bring junior players into senior cricket, and also on the second team on a Saturday. He's an all-rounder and an opening batsman. And he's fairly good on the offside. He's working on the leg side. He's got a good, sound, solid defence. And his best shots are the cover and off drive, cut and back foot drive. He's also a fast, medium bowler. And he either swings the ball or bangs it in on a good length and moves it off the seam. Well, from a CV perspective here, he's done quite a good job, because I'd be picking him in my team.
Yeah.
He lives in the northeast, as I explained. And he just wants to know, what's he got to do to get into the Durham setup? So, there we go. He's painted a lovely oil canvas of himself there. But is he Picasso? That's what we want to know, Coach.
Yeah, well, I did a little digging before the show just to find out a bit more information about him. And Adam gave me his statistics for the season so far. And what was interesting to me was that, as you say, he painted a very good picture of himself, but the statistics didn't quite back up what he was saying. His batting average is 10, which doesn't bode too well, although he is uh, he's looking good with the bowling. He's got single digits bowling average, and he looks like he's been taking wickets this year. But if he wants to get selected for a representative level, and that could be in his case that's a county under 15s, but you know in other countries they have equivalent representative levels. Then you've got you first thing you've absolutely got to do is put the numbers on the board. So my advice really is to become the outstanding player in your team. You know, don't leave it to any chance. Make sure that you're the outstanding player in the team. Don't think that I'm one of the best two or three in the team. If you want to be playing county rep cricket, you've got to be one of the best players in your team. Well, you've got to be the best player in your team, really, especially if you're playing for an unfashionable side, which it's often the case. I mean, whether it's deliberate or not, it's hard to know, but it seems like if you're playing for some teams, you get a better chance of being selected than if you play for other teams.
Absolutely.
I suppose that's just the way of things. You know, people are more familiar with certain teams than they are with other teams, and if they've got a history of producing good players, then maybe the fashionable teams players get a little bit more of a chance than the unfashionable players teams.
Yeah.
But that aside, you know, if you're scoring hundreds and taking five wickets, then nobody can ignore you for any length of time. And then really the next step is to go to your club coach and say, look, what do you think I need to be doing to be going to the next level, to be getting up to rep level? The coach themselves might not know, the club coach might not be sure themselves, but they are in contact with the rep level coaches. They have to be, because they pass the best players along to them. So you can get your club coach to speak to the rep level coach, or maybe you can, if you know the rep coach, you can speak to them directly yourself and say, look, what do I need to do here? What results will get me where I want to be? You know, and that in itself is a very rare thing for a young player to go to a coach and say that, and that will help you stand out. And then if you go off and do those things, then they have to select you, don't they? If they tell you, you know, you have to average 50 with a bat, and then you go away and you average 55, then job done, isn't it? So they can't not pick you. And then it's a matter of doing the right kind of training at the right time. So, you know, making sure that you're doing your technical stuff, making sure that every practice has a purpose. You're not just going into the nets and having a hit, or going into the nets and turning your arm over. Every practice has got something specific in mind that you're trying to improve, whether it's bowling accuracy, bowling pace, whether it's trying to develop an effective sweep shot, whether it's trying to improve your mental strength or trying to improve your tactical awareness. You have to practice in a way that is designed specifically to allow you to improve, and then you have to do that as much as you can. Obviously, time constraints are against you, but you know you've got to do as much as you can. You must see a few players going into the rep levels at your club, Berners.
Yeah, it's purely, you know, the players that are the most talented, really, the ones that that produce the goods on the actual park. And
yeah.
I think when I grew up, I often found that a lot of kids, you all sit around and you all think, you know, why don't I get picked? Well, don't really worry about that. Just go and play. Someone will be watching. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Because
someone's watching those scores come in. I mean, you need an element of luck. It's a bit like football and a bit like AFL and all of that kind of stuff. Every kid's got a dream to make the big, you know, make the big league or whatever. And sometimes it's just a little bit of luck being in the right place at the right time, playing for the right club, going to the right school. The biggest thing is when you get the opportunity, you've got to take it. So, you know, if he does make it and he gets a chance to play a representative game, that's when you've got to perform, else you've got no hope, really.
And the best players, they not only are the most talented by nature, they're the most talented because you find that they're the ones that practice the hardest and in the best way. And they're the ones who go out and make their own luck. You know, they don't sit back and hope for a lucky break. They go out and find that lucky break themselves. Whether they're doing it consciously or not, they're constantly working to find the lucky break. And they're also the ones who, when they get into the situation where they've got the opportunity, they think to themselves, this is my chance. They don't think to themselves, what if I mess up?
Yeah.
Probably that's my shortcoming. Whenever I play a big game, I always think, "Oh no, what if it all goes horribly wrong?" So I need to follow my own advice there. What's the next question, Berners?
Got another question here from Priyank, who's from India. So he's saying, as he's plodding along through his innings, and he gets that middle kind of session, and the ball starts to get a bit older and doesn't travel quite so quickly. The team that they're playing against often starts to bring on the slower bowlers, who tend to bowl very consistently, good line and length, and don't give him many loose balls. As a 13-year-old, he has a bit of trouble with power, so to hit the ball over the fielders, and even when he tries to place the ball in the gaps, it never really happens. He plays a lot of dot balls, which of course builds up the pressure, and then of course hits the panic button and gets out. So he's really quite sad about this, and he wants to just try and keep that scoreboard ticking. How can we help him out?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, especially when you're 13, because it can be frustrating, especially if you're at the smaller size of a 13-year-old. You know, you get a great big 13-year-olds who can smash it all over the place, but you get 13-year-olds who are not quite so well developed, and if you feel like you can't hit it off the square, and you're surrounded by bigger boys, and you can't really do very much about it. My first piece of advice would be, don't panic. You're 13. If you're playing in a technically correct way, then the power will come as you develop. You don't really need to worry too much about not being able to hit it over the top yet, or hit it hard through the gaps yet, because eventually you're going to be able to. You're going to grow, and you're going to be able to do that. The important thing when you're 13 is to make sure that you're well grounded with technique. You have as few flaws as possible, and you're not trying to do silly stuff just to make sure that you're scoring runs at Chris Gayle rates. That's not going to happen, because you haven't got the size of Chris Gayle to back you up. Maybe you will do in 5 years, but right now you're lagging behind a little bit. So first thing is, don't panic. Second thing I would say, make sure that when you are playing your shots, that you're not really worried about whether you hit the fielders or not. Because eventually, if you stay in long enough, you'll gradually find that the fielders will appear to be getting smaller, and the green area between the white area will appear to be getting bigger. It just naturally happens that way as you go through your innings. So you might start slow, but gradually you'll be starting to hit the gaps naturally. I mean, if I said to you, if I put two fielders on an outfield, let's say at cover and extra cover, and I got you to stand in your normal batting crease position, and I underarm the ball, and I told you, right, I want you to, I'm gonna underarm 20 balls to you. How many of those do you reckon you can hit directly to those two fielders, just from the underarms? No one's going to be able to do it every time. Well, perhaps not no one, but not many people are going to be doing it every time. It's, it just naturally there's going to be some variation, and you're not going to get it right. And there you go. Suddenly you're hitting the gaps. So don't deliberately try and hit the gaps, but don't deliberately try and hit the fielders anyway. Just hit the ball with as good a technique as possible, and do your best there. The other thing I would say is, there's nothing wrong with learning how to play a cross bat shot like the sweep. If a spinner's plopping it on a length all the time, and you think, well, I can hit it a lot harder with the sweep because it's a more of a bottom hand shot, then practice the sweep shot a little bit. Don't wait until you're out in the middle to unveil it. Get into the nets and start getting someone to do drop feeds and bobble feeds until you're confident playing the sweep shot. And then you can hit it square of the wicket or just behind square, and you can easily pick up runs by rotating the strike there. And the last option is to play tip and run, of course, which is just dropping the ball at your feet and setting off. Make sure your partner knows what your plan is. And then if you drop the ball absolutely dead and the wicketkeeper's standing back, no one's going to get there in time. The bowler's not going to get there in time, so you're easily going to make it. If you push it gently to cover's left hand and cover's right handed, then again, it's just a matter of being aware. You can make it to the other end fairly easy, because the guy's got to run around the ball before he picks it up. So,
if it was our keeper, you could probably run a two.
Oh really? He's a bit slow for Mark, is he?
Could say that. It's also the captain, so I'll be careful.
Oh, okay. What about you, Bernice? How do you get out of a rut when you're in the middle? Do you even worry about it, or you just think, oh, it's going to come in the end?
I like to go running down the pitch to the ball.
Right. And how does that work out for you?
I quite often miss it.
Right. Okay.
I got stumped 10 times last year, I believe. This year I've been stumped twice, but I've only played 4 games. So it's definitely a problem. I go down the wrong line to the ball, but the thought's there and the intent's there. Yeah, just kind of nurdling it as well. I like a little single here and there. Being a left-hander as well, it's really annoying for the field if you've got a right-hander at the other end. And that can also wreak havoc with the guy's line and length, because suddenly right-hand, left-hand, right-hand, left-hand, he doesn't know whether he's coming or going.
Yeah, upsets everybody, that, doesn't it? Speaking as a keeper, I always complain when a left-hander comes in, ask him if it's still allowed, that left-handers are allowed to play, because it always puts me off. Doesn't feel right. Everybody's standing the wrong way around. It shouldn't be allowed. I'm going to put a petition into the MCC. But yeah, keep it simple, really. You know, it's not a difficult thing to do. You don't have to worry about it. Because the strength will come. You will eventually find the gaps. And if you really are bogged down, you know, you're playing out maiden after maiden, then, yeah, look to get the sweep shot out, no, and play tip and run, because those are extremely effective and extremely safe ways to keep the scoreboard ticking, as they say. Okay, so we've come to the end of the show, and in the now time-honoured tradition etched in the stones of the history of this show, we have the competition winner, and of course anyone who sends in a question and gets their question read out has a chance to win a prize, which is a coaching course delivered courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Bernard, which of the two questions this week is the winner who gets the course for free?
I think we'll go with Priyank. Good for a 13-year-old to be able to analyse his game like that and own up to a few home truths. Good on you, son.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always good to be trying to improve yourself, because there's nothing worse as a batsman than feeling like you're bogged down and you're taking up balls when there's stroke makers sitting in the pavilion thinking, oh, come on, get on with it. I want to be getting my money's worth here, and you're just taking up balls, blocking it. Back the half volleys, back to mid-off. That's no fun for anyone. So it brings its own pressure. But if you can avoid that pressure, keep that pressure out of your head, it's great. So, Berners, if someone wants to send in their own question and have a chance of winning a prize, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com, what do they need to do?
They can just drop us a quick email at coach@pitchvision.com. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, just leave us a little voicemail or speak to us directly at 020-88-167-691.
That's right, we're also on Twitter, PV Cricket Coach, and we have a Pitch Vision Academy Facebook page. So if you like Facebook, come and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us there. Just click on like and join the hundreds of others who join in the conversation every week. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you're a bit of an Apple fan, then you can subscribe on iTunes. Just go to pitchvision.com to find the details there, or you can go to iTunes itself and type in Pitch Vision Academy. It will be the top result for that. And if you don't have iTunes, then you can subscribe to the show using whatever podcast catching program catches your fancy. I've just got myself a new phone, and I'm learning how to subscribe to podcasts with that. It's all very exciting, and I've already subscribed to listen to myself on my phone, which is probably a little bit arrogant, but there we go. You've got to have a slice of arrogance, haven't you, Berners?
Absolutely. Need that bit of filthy streak in you.
Exactly. It might be a team game, but everybody looks at individual averages, don't they? So you've got to look after yourself as well as everybody else on the side. But on that selfish note, that's the end of the show. So until next week, we'll see you next time.